Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. ESPN 102.5. The game, Vols down 8-4 in the top of the eighth. They've got five outs to go. And Tony Vitello from the top step of the dugout still letting the umpires have it. We will have Tony Vitello's press conference, I would assume, at some point here, probably in the next hour. And
looking forward to that one.
It is not looking pretty for the Vols right now, as they just hit the ball to the wall. Good catch by the center fielder at Texas. Four outs to go, down by four in Omaha. We will have that at some point, Tony Vitello, after the game. But the one thing I worry about, and I said this, if Tennessee goes to Omaha and they can't hit, then they don't deserve to win, or they're not going to win. Mm-hmm. We talked about, hey, they've got to hit. And I know Omaha is a lot harder to hit the ball out of than TD Ameritrade, like the last ball out in center field leaves the yard at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. But they scored four runs over two games, as of right now. You're not going to win in Omaha when you're an offensive team trying to do that against those kind of schools. But I still think that after today's antics from the coaching staff, and I was watching on the air, but not like watching where I could hear what they were talking about or what they were saying. So I don't know what the umpires did or didn't do. But I think that Tennessee fans, and I wonder if the Tennessee staff is going to point in the direction of the officiating today as to why they lost in this tournament, and not that, quite frankly, their bats just did not perform at the level they had to.
I would agree with you that their bats have not performed at the level that they should have, but there were some angry Tennessee fans that I've seen on Twitter. They thought that I think it was maybe the sixth run that Texas scored, that it was a little bit iffy, that Tennessee coaches got really riled up about.
I thought he was safe, by the way.
I don't know. His foot looked like it was touching the catcher's foot, and the catcher tagged like his shin. I was looking at a freeze frame of like the very moment where I think he was called safe. So I don't know, but Tennessee fans are very, very upset. They all say, you know, he was out at the plate.
Of course they say that, but blaming the officials is nothing new to the University of Tennessee.
Blaming the officials is nothing new to sports.
But especially the University of Tennessee. My dad has told me that he got hooked on sports talk radio in the 90s, listening to Mondays after the Vols lost because of the crying that came with it. I mean, Tennessee just did not hit the ball well enough in order to win in Omaha, as of right now. But again, I think we will hear some crying, so we'll be looking for that. It's time now, though, for Headlines with Caroline.
We're spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman & Company, right here on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
There's a brand new school right here in Nashville. Have you heard? It's Tight End University.
I have heard about Tight End University.
Yes, 49ers tight end George Kittle, Chiefs Travis Kelce, and former tight end Greg Olsen have introduced Tight End University right here in Nashville. They joined First Take today to talk about what the driving force behind Tight End University was. And George Kittle basically said, tight end is such a specific, difficult, and dynamic position to play. You have one guy out on the field, you have one starter, and you have to be able to do a lot of different things. And he wanted to bring first string, second string, third string tight ends NFL tight ends to train together, learn from each other, and basically just kind of create a network of tight ends. Love it. Max Kellerman asked them today on tight end First Take if Tim Tebow was invited to Tight End University, and I thought that was a little bit of a testy question on Max Kellerman's part.
I think he had already been asked, because I read yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I read yesterday. I forget. It was some kind of podcast or something, but Kittle was asked why Tebow wasn't there, and Kittle was like, because we can't invite everybody.
That's what he said. We can't invite everyone, and there are a lot of guys who play tight end in the league who have been playing this position for their entire lives, for, you know, since college, whatever. Tim Tebow's been playing this position for a couple months. It's just not fair. It's not fair to invite him to this camp. It sounds like a pretty cool, exclusive camp.
I think the reason that they didn't invite him to the camp is because they think he sucks. Well, remember how we talked
too,
about...
He's not a starting tight end.
Remember how we talked about Brady and that Brady clip where he's like, you're taking that mother over me?
I would say that if I'm a 10-year veteran tight end player and Tim Tebow gets invited to this TEU over me.
I don't think it's about 10 years getting invited. I think it's if I'm a legitimate tight end. Like, if I'm a tight end in the NFL, right? Like, I've earned my stripes in the NFL.
Uh-huh.
So, and I'm not saying I'm a great tight end, but, like, I'm a legitimate starting tight end in the National Football League. I am Evan Engram. I am Jonnu Smith. I am Mike Gesicki. Like, I'm that guy, okay? And I see that Tim Tebow is getting invited to tight end universe, or not even that. And the discussion of whether or not Tim Tebow should be invited to this exclusive club in which he has done nothing but garner favor from the coach in order to be technically a tight end, then I would say, well, wait a minute now. Like, I'm not inviting this guy into my club. Not only am I not inviting this guy into my club, but Jared Pinkney played tight end at Vanderbilt. He was on a practice squad last year. He has reported to minicamp as a tight end. Are we inviting Jared Pinkney? Because if we're not inviting Jared Pinkney, then we're not inviting Tim Tebow. Because Tim Tebow is obviously famous, and that's great for Tebow, but he hasn't done anything as far as I'm concerned. And I think it kind of points out to the fact that Tebow is a joke. It's a joke.
I mean, he's exactly what you just said. He's a celebrity.
And right, and that's why he's doing it, because he likes being discussed. He likes the vanity. He likes being in the news. He likes being an SEC commentator on the SEC network is not, when you're legitimately famous, is not a big deal. It is not a big deal to Tim Tebow to be on the SEC network. Tebow likes being famous. He is a Kardashian. That's what he likes. And
he's
these
so
guys,
is a Kardashian.
That's all he cares about. He should be in the NBA. He should try basketball. He's already tried baseball. Why not try basketball?
Why don't you just finish up the big three? Why doesn't he get into NASCAR? He'd be great in NASCAR.
It's like Air Bud. But again, Tim Tebow is a joke. And these guys look at him like he's a joke. And George Kittle won't say it, but it's true. He's a joke.
But I do have to applaud George Kittle for having a very PC calm answer, because it makes sense. Yeah, you know, we have limited room. We got to pick the guys who have been in it for a while, who have proved themselves. But I'm sure in his head he's thinking, are you crazy?
Well, so that same podcast that I was telling you about was reported on yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Greg Olsen was like, yeah, you know, if he becomes a tight end and plays in the league, we'd like to welcome him this year.
Yeah, by
but
all
the
means.
The key point of that was, if he becomes a tight end.
If he becomes a tight end.
We're not taking it seriously.
And that's also, I feel like, just the bare minimum is just being a tight end in the NFL. Like, that's the bare minimum of being considered.
And he's not.
And that he's not.
You know why he's not?
Because he's not good.
Because it's a joke.
Because he's a celebrity.
It's a joke. Tebow is a joke. And I need people to understand this, because if you don't understand this, then everybody will talk about it all the time like they already do, but it will literally become a topic of discussion, which is, here's the Jags in the fourth quarter of this meaningless preseason game. Tim Tebow caught a touchdown pass. And it's going to just be, oh, my goodness. Like, I'm not, I don't, no. It's a joke. And everyone needs to know it's a joke. What else we got?
Speaking of someone else who just loves the vanity and loves the drama of it all, you know what I'm talking about?
Hold on, let me guess. Loves drama. Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers. And it has been so funny, because it's like those same people on Twitter who look at flight trackers. And it's like, oh, you know, this plane from Atlanta just landed in Knoxville. That means that the Vols are hiring Jamie Chatwell as their... No. But people have been following Aaron Rodgers' every last move. And I say people, I mean Packers fans, like serious Packers fans, have been following Aaron Rodgers' every last move. And we have found out that Aaron Rodgers has just renewed his membership at the Green Bay Country Club.
I saw this.
So, what does it mean? Like, does this mean that he is legitimately planning on being in Green Bay for a few more years? Or is he just being like, hey, look at me, front office. I'm going to extend my membership at the country club, and I'm just going to troll you. Because I feel like it's probably the latter.
Anyone ever given thought to the fact that he might have his membership on auto draft? Like, has anybody thought about that? Like, I pay
maybe
bills, too.
I don't know if that's a thing.
I don't pay Aaron's bills, but I pay bills, too. And, like, if Aaron doesn't golf a single round at the Green Bay Country Club, what are membership dues a year to join a country club? Like, 20 grand a year?
Not sure, but he can afford it.
Okay, so, like, let's say it's 20 grand a year. So if Aaron doesn't golf a single round at the Green Bay Country Club, is he going to miss the 20 grand?
No, he probably won't even know that it's missing.
We're talking about whether or not Aaron, and again, I'm not a country club guy. I had the choice of joining a pretty exclusive country club here in town.
Fancy. Look at you.
And I picked the boat club instead. I'd rather do boats. So the boat club says it's a boating country club. I'm not sure I would consider it that. But it's a boat club, and I like the boat club, and I like going on the boat.
Well, do you.
But again, like if Aaron Rodgers doesn't golf a single round, is he going to miss it?
Absolutely not.
And so I think about, Aaron probably got the – I mean, I try to put myself in Aaron's shoes. And I don't like – you know, I mean, I'm obviously close with the brothers, and we know there's a lot of drama there. And you know whose side I'm on.
Yes.
Aaron probably got an invoice, like everybody does nowadays, on his phone that said, hey, your membership's up. And Aaron probably clicked pay and then probably logged into PayPal or
– Does he use PayPal?
Sure, why not? Well, I mean, he's a person. Logs into PayPal or puts his credit card in there or whatever, and it auto-renews, or he just clicks submit, and he gets the email confirmation that he paid for it, and next thing you know, it's a discussion on ESPN. I read nothing into this, because I heard them talking about this on TV.
Uh-huh.
I read nothing into Aaron Rodgers renewing his country club. What's next?
Some more NFL news. Eli Manning, big day for himself and the Giants organization. He will be rejoining the Giants, and I don't know what this means, in a business operations and fan engagement role. So I think it's basically just like he's getting paid by the Giants to like do some media things.
At the Giants charity golf tournament, he will take a couple of swings, take a picture. Here's $400,000.
Exactly, right. He will also have his number 10 jersey retired and be inducted into the Giants Ring of Honor. That'll be later in September in the NFL season. But cool moment for Eli, you know, being solidified as one of the Giants greats.
Isn't this kind of like, I know everybody does those things, where they do the, you know, like the
like Alvin
they
Kamara.
Take the job with the team and they get a check and they don't really do anything. But like, isn't that kind of beneath Eli? Like, if you're Eli, like you've made a lot of money, like,
but
did you even want to do that? Like, I wouldn't want to do that.
I mean, if this now, is maybe, a team you played your entire career and you won Super Bowls and you're retiring his jersey,
maybe Eli's doing it in order for the jersey retirement.
Would they not retire Eli Manning's number if he didn't do this role? I feel like they would.
I have a hard time believing they wouldn't. He won 2 Super Bowls. He's going to the Hall of Fame. I would have a hard time believing that he wouldn't. But again, like, does Eli need the money? Like,
Eli probably doesn't need the money, but it's probably just something to do and a way to reconnect with your old team.
But
and
do you want somebody telling you what to do? Because once you do that, you have a boss now.
But is anyone telling him what to do?
Eli, we need you here at the Celebrity Golf Tournament on July 13th. Somebody's telling you what to do.
But maybe he wants that. Like, what does Eli Manning do on a daily basis?
I don't know, but I wouldn't want anybody to tell me what to do. If I had that kind of money and I was done playing.
Well, Eli Manning may be different.
I don't want to go to the golf tournament that I don't have to go to. What's next?
Another NFL story, Raiders defensive end Carl Nassib became the first active NFL player who is openly gay. And there was a lot of discussion about Michael Sam. Michael Sam was the first player to be drafted into the NFL who is openly gay. Carl Nassib is the first one to be openly gay. He posted a Instagram video announcing it. He also announced that he will donate $100,000 to the Trevor Project, which is an initiative to prevent suicide in LGBTQ youth. So huge step for the NFL and huge bravery on Carl Nassib's part.
Let me say this about Carl Nassib. It's funny because you can bring up this guy, that guy. This is the first legitimate player in the NFL to come out as gay. Like the first player who can't get cut because he's too good to get cut.
Right.
Like Nassib's been around the league and he's not a great player, but he's not getting cut. I have not seen one negative thing said. Now, I haven't like done the digging for it. I'm sure, you know, Johnny Joe on Twitter. Yeah, I'm sure somebody on Twitter, you know, said something. But I'm talking about like real people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really think like it's crazy. Like, I think that gay marriage and the way people view, you know, LGBTQ, like the way people view that nowadays has absolutely transformed in the last 15 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Like, I might have to look up, like, you know, the Reuters polls or whatever, but it feels like in my lifetime as a society, it went from some people don't care Some people hate it, you know, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. too. Most people don't care, but some people hate it for this reason, too. I don't think, I mean, just talking about society in general. I know if I say nobody cares, they're going to sit there and say, well, this website, you know.
There's always one person, right. But I think the world as a whole, country as a whole.
I just don't think that, and I'm glad that Carl Nassib did this because somebody had to be first.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think that we live in a society where being gay is a problem anymore. Like, I mean, I mean that like 100, like it was never a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we legitimately now live in a society where it's not like I can't put myself in anybody's shoes, but I feel like we have made such progress as a country that like, I think the reaction to this has been a positive step for society. Those are headlines with Caroline. 615-737-1025. The Vols are batting in the ninth. They've got a runner on, down by 4 against Texas. They're trailing 8-4. That game on ESPNU right now. Coming up next, Paul Feinbaum. Could this be the last College World Series that reminds us of the normal college times? Because Paul Feinbaum's got a theory. We'll get to that coming up next. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 1025 The Game.
Paul Feinbaum, your reaction.
Greeny, I know you're a big REM fan in the 90s. They had the famous song, It's the End of the World as We Know It. This is the end of the NCAA as we know it. The funeral hasn't happened yet. The last rites have not been uttered, but it's over for the NCAA. It won't happen tomorrow. It won't happen next week, but the next lawsuit will bury the NCAA, and Judge Kavanaugh said that yesterday.
There you go. Paul Feinbaum says it's over for the NCAA. Now, yesterday, we dissected this. Trevor Maddox is going to join us. And usually before we have Trevor on, Trevor asks, you know, what are we going to be talking about specifically? You know, that kind of thing. I texted Trevor today and I said, Trevor, we're going to be talking about the Supreme Court. Because that is what we are going to discuss. The Supreme Court has made their decision. And it was 9-0. As Andy Staples wrote in The Athletic, the Supreme Court didn't just shut down the NCAA, it ran up the score. Staples says, quote, the decision didn't specifically address compensation for athletes outside the narrow scope of the ruling the NCAA appealed, which only had to do with compensation related to education. But, Staples writes, the ruling essentially warned the NCAA that if any of its other rules capping compensation come before the court, they'll be declared illegal as well. Through the NCAA, schools have, for decades, colluded to cap the compensation for college athletes. These schools in the NCAA essentially admitted that, claiming price-fixed labor was essential to their product's most charming feature. So there you go. Basically, Paul Feinbaum says, Justice Kavanaugh wrote, and this goes back to the Staples piece, that we're only saying that what you're doing is illegal now in regards to education, but anything else you bring in front of us, like, it's illegal. They're not paying the players for all their hard work. Illegal. So here you go. So I'm watching the College World Series. The Vols have one out left, and they're probably not going to get it. Vanderbilt plays tomorrow, could be eliminated. At that point, no disrespect to the College World Series, but my interest in it will probably cease and desist. Kind of like my interest in the NHL playoffs. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of waned since the Predators got knocked out. Like, again, it will cease and desist as far as college baseball. Is this the last? Like, is this the last great college sporting tournament of my lifetime? Like, is this it? Like, next year, is it going to change? Because I understand, Feinbaum's right. I think Feinbaum is right. Again, this is related to education. But if it comes to anything else, and it comes before the court, and the court says, no, NCAA, you can't tell those players that, is that it? And then college sports is never the same. Or does it even matter if college sports aren't the same? Are college sports almost grandfathered in as this minor league venue that we will still passionately care about? And that even if the players get paid, it won't affect how we feel about college sports.
Yeah, I think saying that, you know, oh, college sports as we know it, they're over. That I think that is so dramatic.
Is it, though? It was 9-0 in the Supreme Court. That Supreme Court doesn't agree about, they don't agree on anything.
But I don't see how the Supreme Court's unanimous decision equates to our college sports experience. Like them voting unanimously, that means that it's very overdue.
Because the players are going to start getting paid.
Yes, but Michael Jr. was on the morning show today, and he said, when you go to a restaurant and you sit down and you eat the food, does the amount of money that the chef makes affect your experience eating? Does it make you think that the food tastes better or worse than it does?
I would say no, except that it does feel different now with basketball. Basketball does not feel the same. By the way, it has gone final. Texas 8, Tennessee 4. The Vols are out of the College World Series. We'll react to that in just a second. I would say yes, but college basketball does not feel the same.
Well, and I think, too, another point is college players have been getting paid under the radar for a very long time.
It's different.
But it's okay, but what
it's
is
different. It's different. It's because I've covered that kind of scene. Like, I've covered the Louisville, Kentucky. Calipari's bringing this guy in. It's down to them, Duke, and Wichita State. And somehow he picks Wichita State, and you know it's because he's getting paid. You know it, but you don't know it. So now that becomes even more of the fun, right? Mm-hmm. Is Calipari cheating? Is Calipari cheating? Oh, if Calipari's cheating, oh my God.
But now it's not cheating.
Right, but then now it's not fun. Now it's just free agency. Why did Bud Dupree pick the Titans?
Money.
Okay. Why did Jonnu Smith pick the Patriots? Because they paid him the most. And that's what it becomes then, right? It's like, why'd you pick Duke? Yeah, they gave him the most money. Okay. And I just think that at that point, like, what's, you know, like, the thing that's fun about the NFL free agency is not the money itself. It's the fact that we know that these teams are operating within a salary cap, and we don't know what they want to do. But if you're having kids on campus, and there's no cap to it, which you're not allowed to cap it, this is the whole issue right here, you're not allowed to cap it, then I would look back and say it almost is just going to become like, oh, okay, Virginia Tech paid the most. That's why they have the best team. And I have a hard time.
But do you think Tom Brady went to the Buccaneers because the Buccaneers paid him the most?
I think that when you look at Tom Brady as the rule and not the exception, especially given the fact of who he's married to and how much money he's made in his life, compared to what these kids at 17 years old have.
That's fair.
I just don't think I don't think I could take that into this arena and try to argue it.
That's fair. But I do think, too, that money will play a huge factor. But I think also these kids, I'll use college football as an example. You don't play college football, or the majority of kids who come in to play college football, they don't play college football because they want to play college football. They play college football because they want to go to the NFL. So if
why do they want to go to the NFL?
Well, because they want to make money.
Okay.
But if you go to Vanderbilt, no offense to Vanderbilt, but if your options are Vanderbilt and Alabama and Vanderbilt's offering you more money, I'm going to go to Alabama because Alabama gives me the better chance to go to the NFL. Just look at the numbers of players that playing in the NFL that went to Alabama.
Okay, but I think when push comes to shove, Alabama will have more under their salary cap than Vanderbilt will. Like, those schools will spend more money.
Yeah.
We'll get Trevor's thoughts on it next. 615-737-1025. Again, the Vols are out of the NCAA tournament. We'll have a full reaction at 5 o'clock, kind of what Tony Vitello has to say about it. And quite frankly, let me just say this quickly. The Vols lost, and I mean with this with no disrespect to their team, because they have a good team, and I think the program of their future is bright if the NCAA does in fact exist past this year, but they deserved to lose. Like, they deserved to lose. They were not good enough. This is a very unforgiving tournament. It is very hard to win. And the Vols, I don't think at any point were ever good enough to win this tournament. Trevor Maddich will join us next. Stillman & Company, we are delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app. Paul Feinbaum tells us college sports as we know it is over. The NCAA is done. And he says that while, again, this was just about education, the Supreme Court ruling, that the way they wrote it, Justice Kavanaugh, you bring something else in front of the court, they're going to rule against you too. The players are probably on the verge of getting paid. But what all does that mean? Trevor Maddich joins us now, ESPN college football analyst. Trevor, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. All right, Trev, what did you make yesterday of the Supreme Court's 9-0 ruling?
It is a seismic moment in the history of college sports in general and college football in particular. Jared, I think that Paul Feinbaum is right. I think that the NCAA's influence over college football is now everything but officially over. Because at this point, the door is open for them to be sued with any kind of restraint at all of college football. And I mean not just compensation. I'm talking about the 85 scholarship limit. I'm talking about academic standards to be eligible to play. So many different things would fall under the umbrella of antitrust. And even though this particular ruling was very narrow over additional educational benefits, not necessarily compensation, it seems like it opens the door for the rest to happen. And then what good's the NCAA except for organizing wrestling tournaments and maybe March Madness if college teams decide to re-up with the NCAA for that tournament? So right now, I think we are at the precipice of massive, massive change.
How do you feel about that?
I am torn. I'm so torn, Jared, because the, you know, what the change is going to be is paying players. That's what's going to happen. Eventually, that's what's going to happen. How will they be paid? Well, we don't know yet, but it could be just where they will be allowed to go out and profit from their name, image, and likeness separate from the school while they're playing. In other words, they can't partner with the school, but they can partner with business partners outside of the school. And if their name, image, and likeness has value, they can maximize that value while they're in school. Okay, that might be limited to that. It might not be limited to anything, to the point to where even schools, certainly boosters, can pay recruits to come, can pay for even performance. It's possible that if you score X amount of touchdowns, you get X amount of dollars in that game. I mean, these things are all possible, and the changes would be seismic. And here's one of them. Right now in basketball, we've got Nike schools and Adidas schools, et cetera. So you've got, you know, say Kentucky, whatever shoe company they have. Let's just say it's Nike. I don't know if it is. Let's just say it is. You open the door for companies, shoe companies, that sponsor a school to pay the top recruits as much as it will take to get them to that school if they don't go directly to the NBA, so that they go far in March Madness and they can have better promotional opportunities for their shoes. Now, this is being alleged, and I say that with great sarcasm, to be occurring right now, but I'll use the word alleged because I don't personally have proof. But certainly that kind of thing will be open to happen above board. And all of a sudden, recruitment, reasons for recruitment, compensation for signing with the school will all be completely different. And I think from a standpoint of what do I think about it, it comes down to this. The change will be unsettling. But in order for me to say the change shouldn't occur, I have to tell that 18-year-old recruit, whether it's basketball or football or whatever, who's got a skill that's valuable in the market, that they can't maximize that value in the open market. And I can't tell that recruit that. I can't tell him that, because that would open the door to people telling me that I should broadcast for free because I love broadcasting. Well, I do love broadcasting, but some other guy shouldn't be telling me how much I can get paid. The market should tell that.
So what do you think that this all means for how we, the fans, enjoy college football on Saturdays?
I think in the beginning, the disruption will be painful. But I think overall, it won't matter a whole lot. I mean, Jared, do you watch Louisville, your beloved Louisville Cardinals, because they're amateurs or because you love the school? You love the logo. You love the colors. You love the place. And you want to associate with the place. Well, why do you love Louisville?
Well, to your point on that question, Trev, when I was on the air in Louisville, I used to always discuss this all the time, and I would say somebody who loves Alabama the same way that somebody who loves the Dallas Cowboys loves the Dallas Cowboys. And I would agree with that. But I don't think college basketball is the same. And the reason I don't think college basketball is the same is because once the one-and-done rule, an NBA rule, but once the one-and-done rule happened, it was kind of like, you know, these kids, they don't care about college basketball. They're here for 5 minutes, then they're gone. They don't care. You don't get to watch them throughout the years. And it was like we were just discussing before you came on, Trev, that if you have college football, where all these kids are deciding about is who's going to pay them the most, then the recruiting stuff doesn't really even become fun anymore. Like, even in basketball, when I worked in Louisville and we knew it was kind of crooked, it was kind of like, oh, is Calipari going to get in trouble because that kid's driving a BMW? And now that's out the window. Like, I, to your point about being torn at the beginning, I'm torn about whether or not, you know, this is all going to turn into basketball, which is these kids don't want to be here. They're not going to be here next year. They're just in it for the money. I mean, what's the... Like, and then it really becomes the minor leagues. And we were talking about this yesterday, Triple-A baseball. I mean, how many people are going to watch a Triple-A baseball game compared to an Alabama football game? But that's what it is, if it's just all about who's paying me the most.
But how many people would watch March Madness that don't watch the D-League, right? Or watch,
sure,
you know, European or Israeli or South American, Brazilian professional basketball, right? You know, I wonder if that will change people's perception that much. Because you're right, people that love Alabama, they love Alabama, and they want Alabama to win. And right now, recruits choose Alabama for reasons of their own. I mean, typically, the most important reason is, can Alabama be a pathway to the NFL? Second is, can I win national championships? Third, can I play early? Right? These are things that are really important to recruits. Somewhere down the list is, can I get a good education here? Do I think the campus is pretty? Well, but whatever reason they have for going, it will be added now. Well, where can I make the most money? And, you know, you can make the case that there are people getting possibly satchels of cash under the table anyway, right? And there's a whole lot of allegation of that going around. All this would do is put it up above. But I agree with you. I think that it would change the perception of it. But overall, I think after a while, a few years, people will get used to the new normal. And as long as Alabama keeps playing football, then I think people that love Alabama won't care how much the players are getting paid. I think there'll be a whole lot of unintended consequences, though, about managing the program from within the program that'll just be a nightmare. I mean, right now, the concept of the transfer portal is creating all kinds of havoc for you know, college football coaches to build out their roster. The transfer portal, now you've got the super seniors and all the stuff from COVID, so you got extra guys, you got to manage those scholarships, things like that. That's a massive pain. Now all of a sudden, if you're saying that college football players should be able to be compensated, there's no way that you can say they can't have representation. So here come agents. And are those agents out there managing the transfer portal, going from school to school to school to get the next school ready for their kid that's at State U, if that kid isn't being maximized to the agent satisfaction at State U? And so if that kid then takes off, who's he working for, the coach, or is he working for the agent, right? And managing rosters will be a massive nightmare. But I don't think free agency in the NFL killed the NFL, right? Mm-hmm. The NFL is better than it's ever been. And I go back to when I was playing, Jared, that there was no real free agency. You could move, but it was just about impossible because of the compensation that was involved. So once you signed with a team, you were with that team. Your contract was up. You could retire or re-sign with that team, and that was about the only thing. And people were worried that having their stars that they loved on their team, the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, that they wanted to be a Pittsburgh Steeler, but that guy now became a Dallas Cowboy. And then a few years later, that guy's a San Francisco 49er. And people thought that would diminish their love of the NFL, but the NFL is better than ever now.
So what becomes the big element here then in college football? You know, like, what is it about who can get the most money for the program? Is it about who can sell the non-money, the non-tangible, non-financial elements to recruits? Like, what becomes the issue here? Because, like, I've had buddies that have played in the NFL who tell me, oh, our facilities, and they played at good colleges, and they said, our facilities here compared to where we played in college stink, because they're not taking you through the Indianapolis Colts weight room to say, wow, look at this weight room. This is why you should sign with the Colts. When you fly into Indianapolis, it's, hey, we're going to give you $38 million over 4 years. How's that sound? Well, Green Bay's offering me 5 years, so you need to match it. And I do wonder how this is going to affect that element of college football. And I think there's a second tree branch to that, which is, will it be tougher for the fans to get behind when it's like, well, you know, Virginia Tech just paid more money than we did?
Jared, you raised such a great point because a lot of those facilities upgrades come from donations. But and they give those donations because they want to attract a better caliber of recruit to a higher caliber of football facilities so that they can win more. But to your point about the Colts, it's funny that you bring that up, Jared. That's a great point. I was playing for the Jets, and I became a free agent, and I didn't want to leave the Jets. I loved the way they were using me.
You're the only player in the history of the NFL that didn't want to leave the Jets, but continue.
Well, and I loved it. I loved it there. Everything about it, I loved it. But I went and visited the Colts. And you talk about the Colts locker room. It's changed now. But back then, the Colts locker room had a dingy gray old carpet. It had these little tiny stools that were too short for chairs. It had some, like, bad paintings of Colts helmets up on the wall. That was the entire decoration. It was nasty. And to get there, you had to walk through the side of the building, past the dumpsters, through these dank, dark, linoleum-floored corridors to get to the locker room, right? And guess what? I didn't care because the Colts, on that visit, made me an offer. And they wrote a check on that visit for my signing bonus and put it in front of me and said, if you sign before you walk out that door, this check is yours and you are a Colt. And at that moment, I didn't care at all what the locker room looked like. That check was my whole world. And so it will change recruiting from that standpoint. But it'll change recruiting in other ways as well. Because, you know, who will end up paying? Will the schools? Well, then the rich schools will be able to pay more. Will it be boosters? Well, then rich schools have rich boosters. But I think it's really interesting that, you know, that check that I looked at as a Colt, or before I signed with the Colts, and I did, by the way, I took the money. So, you know, I sold myself for a dollar. There you go. But what about in the group of five where you might have a school that has a rich benefactor, just rich, that wants buy the best recruits in the country, right?
Trev,
that'll throw a lot of things off balance.
Who's the, in your opinion, just off the top of your head, which school, if we just went full on cash, which school would be the most advantageous football program in Division I right now?
Okay, so who would be the best? It would still be the best. You'd still have Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama.
See,
you know, although Clemson, go ahead.
I think Oklahoma State becomes the top program in the country if it's all about the money, because they got the most of it.
They have tons of money and they have benefactors. Although you know they've had some of their benefactors have passed away now, but they still have them. You're right, but. Oklahoma State, right? They're in Stillwater, Oklahoma. If you've ever been there, it's a wonderful college town. It's about impossible to get there. You have to fly into Oklahoma City. Then you have to take a covered wagon to the outskirts of Stillwater. Then you have to get a shovel and burrow a tunnel to get from there into town. And it seems like that's how you get there. It's a pain in the rear. But it is beautiful when you get there. You don't want to leave, right? But look at Houston, group of five. Look at UCF in Orlando. Look at SMU in Dallas, places that have potentially massive donor bases. And if one of those schools comes up with a benefactor and others don't, you're going to have a huge disruption in the group of five, and you'll have new top 10 perennial programs like SMU tried to be back in the 80s. For those that don't remember,
sure,
SMU cheated in the 80s. They had under-the-table payments. They had big stars coming there that had no business going there otherwise, but for the payments. They had big stars driving Corvettes all around Dallas, and they shouldn't have been getting that. And eventually they got busted. Then they got busted again. Then they got busted again. And the NCAA gave them the only death penalty in the history of college football, which is to say they shut down the SMU program for a period of several years. Then they came back, and they still haven't gotten back to that point. Well, if you make all that legal, a place like an SMU can do that, whereas other schools might not be able to afford to. It's just one of the interesting things that we will watch as we go forward, because it is going to happen.
Trevor Maddich is with us. More on this, again, the Supreme Court ruling. And it will, no matter how it does it, it will just cataclysmically change college football. We'll continue along with Trevor Maddich next, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Stillman & Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Paul Feinbaum, your reaction.
Greeny, I know you're a big R.E.M. fan in the 90s. They had the famous song, It's the End of the World as We Know It. This is the end of the NCAA as we know it. The funeral hasn't happened yet. The last rites have not been uttered. But it's over for the NCAA. It won't happen tomorrow. It won't happen next week. But the next lawsuit will bury the NCAA. And Judge Kavanaugh said that yesterday.
There you go. Feinbaum not holding back this morning on ESPN. Trevor Maddich with us, ESPN college football analyst, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters. Trev, put yourself in the shoes of Nick Saban. You've made about $1 billion. You've been coaching one way for most of your life. And now whoever's got a bigger check is going to get Julio Jones. Whoever's got a bigger checkbook is going to get Derrick Henry and Dante Hightower and Dre Kirkpatrick and Alex Leatherwood and DJ Fluker and TJ Yeldon and Jerry Jeudy and you name it. Whoever's got a bigger checkbook is going to get them. How would you feel?
Yep. It changes the dynamic for the Alabamas. Now, I think the Alabamas, the Ohio States, et cetera, will still find a way to get the best recruits. They'll end up with the most money, et cetera. But it does change the way the deck is shuffled and stacked in their favor for recruiting now. Alabama right now has a massive advantage over pretty much everybody in the country because of their pathway to the NFL. But what will end up happening is, you know, like you said, a lot of those players will go somewhere else if they can't afford to pay them all. And they won't be able to afford to pay them all. Certainly there's going to become a limit. But the edge of the NFL pipeline is going to be a little bit less important. I mean, if you tell a player coming out of high school that you can go to the NFL from our school, but while you're here, we're going to pay you twice as much as them, right? As opposed to what it is now, which is Alabama will say, you're getting the same compensation from everybody. We have a better pathway to the NFL than they do, even though you can go to the NFL through them, right? So it's going to change that pitch a little bit. Right now, I think what the 18-year-old unguided missiles coming out of high school wanting to play college football, their attention span is Twitter, right? On Twitter, if you make a post and in 5 minutes you don't have enough likes on it, it's old news. It's over. You've got to put something else up there. That is not just a microwave mentality. It's a super microwave mentality, but it's the way today's 18-year-olds have basically grown up. And what is right in front of them right now? The NFL is a distant dream, but a big check is right now, today. And I think that will overwhelm any other recruiting pitch that schools can make.
Trevor, you're Danny White, the athletic director at Tennessee. I'm Josh Heupel, the coach. What is our strategy now, knowing that the rules are not going to change tomorrow, but they're going to change really quickly? And for our program that's got a lot of fan support, got a lot of money, we need to get some players. How would you approach this if you were Danny White and I was Josh Heupel?
Jared, that's a great question, because the things we're talking about right now are speculation down the road. More lawsuits need to be won in order for all these things to come into fruition. The reason we're talking about them now as quite likely is because of the way the opinions were written. The majority opinion by Justice Gorsuch and the concurring opinion by Justice Kavanaugh seemed to open the door to what you and I are talking about now. But what we do know is happening now is changes in the way athletes will be able to handle name, image, and likeness and to be able to profit from that. We don't know what all the details are going to be, but we do know that some of the top schools are already laying a foundation. For example, I was just out at BYU, and BYU sits in, you know, the Salt Lake area in Utah, in the fastest growing, the most dynamic regional economy in the country. And they've already put together massive offline partnerships for both online companies and companies that aren't, you know, necessarily internet companies, so that the players can immediately jump into offline partnerships to benefit from and to maximize their potential for name, image, and likeness. And there are some other schools in the country that are that proactive, that are getting that far out ahead of it. And the way BYU is setting it up is that when the foundation is laid, which it is now, well, we know what the details are. They'll be in position to immediately maximize those details. What's the pitch for the recruit? Well, the pitch for the recruit is, hey, you can come in right now. You may or may not have all this pay players thing ready to go by the time you graduate, but you have this in the bag right now. So if you are Tennessee, if you're Danny White, if you're Josh Heupel, what do? You need to maximize what you can sell to recruits that is going to happen this summer, probably in a few weeks, which is open the door to name, image, and likeness profiting and make sure they have a plan that can compete at the highest level so they can tell recruits that you can come here and make money on that level right now if you have the goods and if you're interesting enough online. We have the partnerships for you. Right? That's what they need to do, because if all you promise them is something that might be available in a year or two, which is then we can start paying you, they're going to go to the place that can pay them now, and the places that can pay them now, or not, let me put it a different way, the place where they can make money now are the ones that maximize name, image, and likeness. Remember this, we were talking about, I don't know if we were talking about this. There is an Alabama running back who's very high profile in the NFL. I don't want to say his name, and I want to say the team because I don't want to talk out of school. But I was told by somebody who knows that this guy will make $50,000 for a social media mention because he's got over 1 million followers, and he's got an agent that will go out to a company and say, look, you pay him $200,000, that'll get you 4 mentions over the course of the year. And then they set up what the mention is like. Okay, I need to have the product presented visually this way. You need to say these kinds of things. You need to participate with the product. And $50,000 times 4, $200,000 contract, that's one contract. Well, that will be available now in college football when we get through the summer and these things are starting to come into fruition. That's what Tennessee needs to sell.
Trev, I know you're a football guy. How do you think this will affect the non-revenue sports?
You know, Jared, I think it's going to further erode them. Because right now, part of the money that would go to compensate players ends up paying for non-revenue sports. And so we're looking at name, image, and likeness where the schools aren't paying the players, but where the players are, you know, maximizing offline opportunities away from the school within a structure that the school may have set up, but they can't partner with them in terms of paying them right now. That's what we think. Here's the thing, though. If the NCAA limitation or banning on schools paying actual direct payments from the university to the player, except for the scholarship, if that gets washed away because of all this, then you'll have two sources of income for recruits. One is boosters, businesses, income that's away from the school. But then if the school is allowed to pay players too, you know that they will, because they want to get the best players. And so if that happens, then money that would have gone from football revenue to the wrestling team, to the track team, to the lacrosse team or softball team, that money will not be available now because they're giving it to the players of the sport that brings in the most revenue. Football. And in some schools, it's also basketball. And in some schools, it's also women's basketball. But that's really about it. A few baseball programs bring in some money. But ultimately, if we get to a point where schools can write a direct check, if we say for the University of Tennessee, just as an example, Tennessee can legally now write a check to a recruit for $50,000 for a signing bonus, and they take that out of their SEC network money. Well, that would have gone to the library. It would have gone to so many other places. It will not be available now. And keep this in mind, that a year or so ago, Stanford, which has possibly the greatest overall athletic department in the country, when you add in all the Olympic sports and the non-revenue sports, they had to drop about 10 or 11, I believe, non-revenue sports because of COVID and because of money. And I think that's going to get worse if money goes directly from schools to recruits.
Trev, Mark Emmert got a contract extension from the NCAA. I can't think of really one good thing he's done. Where is he in all of this?
You know, I think this is a great day for people that hate the NCAA. I think the NCAA has a lot of good people, Jared, that are working from a playbook that has just gotten too convoluted, right? And I think they're going to end up going away. They're going to end up going away because they're not going to be able to restrict income. Well, then why can they restrict other things? You know, and we talked about, you know, academic standards and things like that. If that's also an illegal restraint of trade, then what are they good for, right? And again, organizing Olympic sports. Keep this in mind, and I always go back to this, that during the O'Bannon trial out in California a few years ago, which was another name, image, and likeness thing, Mark Emmert testified that the reason that the NCAA should make all the money from college players' name, image, and likeness was to protect the college players from commercial exploitation. Now, think about that for a minute. And that's the image of the NCAA for a lot of fans. So this is a good day for people that hate the NCAA, and I'm sure the NCAA is wondering how to remain relevant going forward.
Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst, joins us weekly, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trev, take care. We will see you next week. I'm sure we will have more kind of hooks off of this next time we chat. Appreciate you, Trev.
Thanks, Jared.
Yep. So, I will say this again about the NCAA. I'm not really sure what they ever did, but now, I mean, here's what I want to know. What about Rick Pitino? What about Will Wade? What about Hugh Freeze? What about all these guys that we just vilified? Oh, that Rick Pitino, he's a... What about Rick Pitino now? That's all I wonder. Tennessee gets knocked out by Texas 8-4 in the College World Series. Coming up next, what Coach Tony Vitello had to say about it, plus our reactions. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.